Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, sitting in for Eamon Shanahan this week is Dr. John Chute. John, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We haven't seen you in a while.
No, I'm back. I know Dr. Eamon has gone far, far away on holidays.
And he is.
Well-deserved break. So I'll step in for him for a couple of
sessions.
Yeah.
Very good. Delighted to have you. Well, just to remind the listeners that it's general queries today. So if you've got something to ask John, send it in. And remember, if you're sending it in by text, it would be a big help if we knew how old you are and whether you're male or female. Remember, we can't tell from a text message whether it's a man or a woman who's contacting us. John, let's get down to business because there's loads of questions for you. We'll start with this one from a 47-year-old female. She says, I run every week. I don't smoke, but I do enjoy a drink maybe 3 or 4 times a week. I had a blood pressure monitor on recently for 24 hours and my numbers were high, mainly the bottom number. I have to meet my GP about this, but could you give me advice in the meantime?
Right. The first thing that strikes me there was I drink 3 or 4 times a week. There's no quantity. It's 3 or 4 sessions she's drinking for, but is she drinking 2 drinks, 4 drinks, 5 drinks? We don't know. So alcohol adversely affects females more than males. And that'd be the first thing I'd stop is drinking, because alcohol is a dead weight. So it drives the blood pressure as well, because you're carrying that extra weight. She is running, and absolutely keep it up. But certainly she wants to modify her blood pressure by not having to go on tablets, which may well be the case. She should cut back on the alcohol intake. Because there's
but back or cut out?
Cut out, ideally, but I won't be a killjoy. Definitely cut back for sure. Probably increase her exercise, and then the weight will fall off, the blood pressure will follow. Blood pressure drops tend to be about 10%, 5 to 10% with weight loss. So you don't have to go on medication if there's modifiable risks there that you can do. And eliminating alcohol, which is, like I said, is a dead weight. There's no nutritional value whatsoever from just simply piles on the pounds, would be the way I would go initially, even if her blood pressure monitor is showing high blood pressure readings.
Yeah. And is it the case that as women get older and go, we say postmenopausal, they can't metabolize?
Same for males. Yeah, absolutely. The difference between women and men is that there's more fat content with women, so they have a higher fat percentage than men do. So, for example, elite female athletes would have a fat content somewhere in the mid-teens, mid-low teens, whereas the elite male athletes would be low single figures. And then your average female, for example, who would be a casual runner, for example, might be maybe high teens, low 20s fat, whereas your casual male runner of the same age might be maybe low teens. So there's a higher fat content. And like I said, that's been added to by taking alcohol up to 4 times a week. And as I said, we don't know the quantity per session.
Yeah. Okay, so 3 or 4 times a week, that stands out to me
straight away. And as I said, you can multiply that by the number of drinks per session.
Yeah, so that's the first thing she should do.
Absolutely.
Male in his mid-50s says he has pains in his ears for the last 2 months. He's gone through 4 lots of antibiotic drops, has had his ears cleaned in UHC, and still I'm in pain. I'm going back to Cork again next week, but I'm wondering if John has any idea what this could be.
Well, the first thing is that he should be scanned, which would be the first thing. There's one or two very, very rare things. One's called an acoustic neuroma. I've never seen it in nearly 30 years of practice, but we always have that at the back of our mind for recurrent ear pain. And then the other thing which would be talking to me here is that's actually a dental problem, which would be a thing called temporomandibular joint dysfunction, or TMJ dysfunction. And it's where the jaw angle meets the skull just in front of the earlobe, and people would be getting that condition after grinding their teeth at night. So their mouth goes side to side, it inflames the joint, it gives you ear pain, and then you need to see a dentist generally for a dental x-ray to confirm it, and then often a mouth brace at night to wear, a mouth guard at night to stop the grinding effect, which in turn will stop the inflammation, which in turn will stop the pain. That'll be probably my two main things here, but I'd say it wouldn't necessarily be an ear problem per se.
Okay, a lady from Killarney, I think this is an older lady, she's wondering what causes leg cramps. She said, I find it very hard to get out of bed some morning with the cramps.
Yeah, often it's due to sometimes low calcium levels would be probably the main cause for it. And sometimes people would require something like quinine as well, or quinine sulfate, which is in tonic water to treat it, even if your calcium levels are normal. But generally speaking, as one gets older, cramping becomes more common. So dehydration is also a player here as well. But I would definitely consider people get their calcium levels checked by their own doctor, consider going on quinine, which you can buy in a get prescribed in a tablet form, quinine sulfate, or you can get, say, for example, it in tonic water, like a glass tonic water, every single day or just before to go to bed at night. That should settle it, but there often is any cause for cramps.
Okay. A gentleman, in his mid-50s, says, my cholesterol was 5.5 and I was put on a statin and aspirin in February of 2025. With diet changes, my cholesterol came down to 3.8 last November.
Yes.
Would the doctor be able to advise if I'll have to stay on the statin and the aspirin long term?
Well, he did say that it was that statin and diet.
No, statin and aspirin.
Yes, but he's on the statin, I presume, for whatever, a year at this stage.
Yeah, with diet changes, he says his cholesterol came down.
Yeah, it'd be unusual to drop that low from 5.5 to 3.5 on diet alone. So I
3.8,
presume 3.8, sorry. I would say the reason he was put on a statin and aspirin at 5.5, which is very mildly elevated, we need to have the levels below 5, is probably a family history is very, very strong there of premature heart disease. Just put things in perspective. The cholesterol, I saw a very, very high cholesterol level in a patient of mine who I haven't seen for a while now of 9.5, you know, which would be up. 10 is very, very high. So 5.5 is quite a low level and people are generally only advised dietary modification then. So I suspect that this person here has a very strong family history of premature heart disease. So you got to really get that cholesterol down. And if he's down to 3.8, he's an ideal country. He needs to stay at that level and stay at the statin that he's taking in addition to the aspirin. It's a bit unusual to go on aspirin at that age unless there's a very strong family history.
Okay.
And I think that's what's happening here.
Okay. People just don't like being on medication.
They hate medications with a passion. And I only got a letter from my colleague, Dr. Mackie in the Bonds, yesterday on a chap who's in his late 70s and his cholesterol is about 6.7, 6.8. And he's refused point blank to take it, a statin, from me and Dr. Mackie. As said in his letter that I received yesterday in the Post, and is aware of the risks. I like that. So you could bring a horse to water and all that. And,
I know.
But statins, people are kind of afraid of them. I see them as a very, very clean drugs overall. The only real side effect from statin that I see is multi-joint pains, which come on fairly rapidly and are all over the body. It isn't just isolated to one joint. And people feel as if they've been hit really hard by somebody in all joints, and it comes on with a couple of weeks of starting the statin, and it's a family effect, so you have to knock out all the statins, they just simply won't work. I think that the intolerance to statins is about 1 in 5 of people. About 4 in 5 have no problems, including the person you're talking to. I take a statin as well.
You take a statin too, well there you go.
So it's a very, very good drug, but as you said, Deirdre, there's a real sort of resistance
stigma
to going
about
going on a tablet where they don't see the benefit. I mean, if you come into me with a pain, for example, say you injure your wrist or you injure your leg, and I give you an anti-inflammatory and pain relief, you will see the benefit after 24 hours because it's taking care of the pain. So you'll take the tablet, you'll see the difference. But when you take a statin, you don't see the benefit. You cannot see any reason why you're taking it, bar the blood results that would be done every 6 months or depending on how good you are. So my advice is if there's a family history of heart disease, and certainly if your cholesterol level is north of 6, you should consider a statin, and you should consider a statin as you get older.
Well, while we're in the area of cholesterol, I'll take this one. It's from a 65-year-old, but I don't know whether it's a man or a woman, but this person's cholesterol is 6.7.
Yeah.
Do I need to take some prescribed medication, they're asking?
In short, yes. Two-letter word. Statin. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The effect of the statins is that it reduces one's risk of heart disease and stroke dramatically. And longevity kicks in, and then obviously people tend to live a much healthier life on the back of it, you know.
A female age 32 says she bruises very easily. A little tip off of anything and bad bruising appears and it can be very sore. What could be causing this?
Everything from no cause whatsoever to having a low platelet count, which would be your clotting agent. So if she hasn't done it already, she should get a platelet check by her GP and also do a clotting factor screen as well. You don't have to fast for these. They're just simply straightforward hematological bloods. But 9 times out of 10, at a 32-year-old, you said there, you're not going to have a cause for it. It's just simply one bruises. Now, that's separate to the elderly, where the previous guy was on aspirin. They will bruise quite easily because a lot of people, as they get older, will be on an aspirin or they'll be on another anticoagulant, and the slightest touch causes a lot of bruising. And you probably know yourself, you'd see an elderly person coming in, and they looked like they've met Mike Tyson down the street, who gave a few boxes. They're absolutely covered in bruises, and that is from a very, very innocuous fall or slip or whatever, because people tend to bruise quite a lot on anticoagulants, but at that age it's usually no known cause.
And the chap with the sore ears, with the first question's been back on, and he said, I'm really sorry.
That was quick.
Would John repeat the first thing he said about the pain in my ears? I think the first thing you said was...
an acoustic neuroma, which is basically a benign tumour of the ear canal. And I, as I said, in nearly 30 years now working, I've never seen one.
Okay.
It's just something that was drummed into us when we were in college, just to keep an eye out for non-resolving ear pain in an otherwise normal examination. You have to do an MRI for it.
Yeah, so maybe an MRI. Yeah, and you also MRI. Mentioned it could be the
TMJ,
the
temporomandibular joint dysfunction, TMJ, which is very common. It's much more common than you expect. And it's exclusive to adults. I've never seen it in kids.
Okay, very good. We'll take a break at this point. 083-300-3300 if you'd like to text in a question for Dr. John Chute. He's in this week for Eamon. And remember, again, can't say it enough, if you're sending in your query by text or WhatsApp, let us know whether you're male or female, and also a rough idea of how old you are. You obviously don't need to give your name or identify yourself in any other way. You can also phone Brenda, who's taking the calls today, on 066 712 3666. Just gone 2:15. You're listening to Wednesday's Talk About, and we're back in a moment.
Talk About on Radio Kerry, sponsored by Kitty O'Shea's Seafood and Grill Restaurant, College Street, Killarney, where the finest quality produce is sourced, served and enjoyed with award-winning hospitality. Experience it today at Kitty O'Shea's Killarney.
Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, John, this next question is very kind of general, very vague, but you might be able to give a holistic answer to it, or whatever the term is. Somebody wants to know, what causes chesty coughs in men?
I could be here all day.
That's what I meant, yeah.
In summary, it's everything from an irritant cough, which we all get where they're just getting mucus production and we're coughing it up and we need a cough bottle. Nasal drip from nasal congestion coming down, irritating the chest. Smoker's cough, where you're an active cigarette smoker and you're producing a lot of mucus in shall we, retaliation to the exposure for cigarette smoke, shall we say. So you're coughing up this phlegm the whole time. Asthmatics have a cough. People in heart failure have a cough. You get a cough from, say, a bony injury as well, where you're not expanding your chest, you're trying to cough to relieve it. There's absolutely a multitude of reasons for it. And you have to deal with each person as you see fit.
When should you start worrying about a cough?
If it's non-resolving, they say after a month. Definitely you're into a situation where you need to be investigated, and particularly where you're a cigarette smoker. That would set the alarm off for the likes of myself and my colleagues, where a chest x-ray is absolutely necessary at that stage, because we look at a bronchogenic carcinoma, which is basically a cancer of the lungs but involves the bronchi, the tubes, not lower down, but of the tubes themselves. And I have one man now who presented like that last August, September. Settled to a degree with some antibiotics and steroids. Still had the cough 6-7 weeks later. Straight to x-ray, there it was. Straight to CAT scan, there it was. And I sent it to my respiratory colleagues then for a scope test. So it's usually when it's lingering and longer than 4 weeks. There is a cough called a cough of 100 days, which is whooping cough, which would be in kids and obviously those who are not vaccinated. But generally most coughs would settle after about 2 to 3 weeks, generally.
Yeah. And do you sometimes come across people who end up having lung cancer who never smoked in their life?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Passive smokers, absolutely. About 90%, now I stand corrected here, are still related to smokers, but there's still 10% who are non-smokers. And then there's a aflatoxin deficiency, which is the major cause after that. But generally speaking, you would have non-smokers who would be in a smoking environment, where their partner, stroke husband, wife would be an active smoker, and that's just unfortunate for them. But it's usually exclusive to smokers where you would get a lung carcinoma.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I presume.
Dare I say it, vapors? By the way, when we have this conversation in 20 years' time.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth, because I was going to ask you about, you know, the amount of teenage girls that are vaping is
you
scary.
And I both have 15-year-old daughters, and they'll tell you the extent of it. All you do is ask them. The number of girls in particular who vape relative to the boys, I have no idea about the statistics, but I'd say it's probably 2 or 3 to 1, I'd say. And these would be people who've never smoked. They just take up vaping as their, shall we say, pastime for one of another. But the classical science now is a thing called a popcorn lung. I don't know if you've heard of that. So the popcorn lung is what's seen now on scanning, and the symptoms usually are an asthmatic type picture in active vapors, and then we're seeing the popcorn lung and chronic vapors. That's what's been seen at the moment. Now, bear in mind, people are vaping about maybe 15 years now, I suppose, probably no longer than that. We probably won't see any of the more noxious side effects, and I think we're going to have a mutant tumor down the line in 15, 20 years' time when studies will start showing people who have been vaping for, say, 20 years are now going to show pretty nasty looking lung tumours. I'm pretty sure that's going to happen. I'll be retired. I'll probably sit back and say, I told you so.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we have a 53-year-old female. She says she's very active, goes to the gym 3 times a week, but she has terrible sciatica, pinching pain in her left thigh. She feels like her buttocks are on fire the whole time, and every step she takes, it's there.
Absolutely, that
what
is.
She do.
She needs to get an MRI scan of her lower back straight away. She's probably right. There is probably nerve root irritation, which unfortunately is extremely common. Nothing to do with her size or shape or anything like that. It can happen to anybody spontaneously, whatever. Maybe due to lifting weights might be probably the main reason here. Again, I have a patient who's a weightlifter, presented with foot drop about a month ago, and he had nerve root impingement at one level, which was completely consistent with his signs. So that might be an exacerbating factor, which needs an MRI for lower back. The MRI then determines your treatment protocol after that. About 90% of disc problems which cause disc pain, so the buttock pain and the thigh pain, will settle in about 6 months, about 90% odd. And then the following 10% would require neurosurgical intervention, sometimes with discectomy, sometimes laminectomy. That's all down to my neurosurgical colleagues. And if there is a nerve being pressed on, we tend to go on the physiotherapy route quite a lot, pain management, or we see a pain specialist as well. So I would be referring her to see one of my colleagues who would be an anaesthetist. We have that service in the Bonds and Tralee. It's also available publicly in the South Infirmary, and all the other private hospitals have it as well, where they tend to give a nerve block, which would be, people call it an epidural, but that's kind of what they would give.
Now, we have a listener who wants you to discuss osteoporosis. She says she's 52, recently diagnosed with it. She's been put on HRT and calci-2-D.
Correct. And she needs to exercise, so needs to weight-bearing exercise. Osteoporosis is, by definition, bone thinning. There's 3 types of bone that you're going to get as you get older. There's going to be normal bone, there's going to be osteoporosis, which is established bone thinning, and then there's a halfway house, osteopenia. And depends on your T-score that you have on a thing called a DEXA scan, D-E-X-A. Now, DEXA scan is basically a photograph of the bone density, usually in the wrist, usually in the hip and the lower back. So you get one of those 3 levels. So you're going to be normal, intermediate, which is osteopenia, which is reversible in theory, it should be reversible, and then osteoporosis, which is established. So osteoporosis is like deforestation, basically, very, very little structure left to the bone, huge risk of fractures. We're going back to sort of innocuous falls, so it doesn't take much to cause a fracture in an osteoporotic person. So it could be, for example, a slip in the kitchen, it could be sitting down suddenly and banging your hip on the way down. Anything whatsoever can cause an osteoporotic fracture. And the treatment for osteoporosis actually begins in your teens. So we go back to our girls again. Girls are obsessed about their weight, obviously, in their teenage years, but they may not be taking milk, for example, which is high in calcium and vitamin. And that basically is a concrete mix for good bone growth so that they don't become osteoporotic 30, 40 years later. And then the second thing I mentioned there was exercise. So weight-bearing exercise, again, I'm going back to the teens, walking, running, jumping, for example, in basketball, volleyball, football, anything which involves an outlay of weight-bearing exercise. And that then is the superstructure that protects going down the line. And then there's other players that come into play then, apart from relative inactivity or being underweight, would be being overweight. And then smoking, of course, is detrimental to people and developing osteoporosis down the line. So when you do your DEXA scan, you think you're osteoporotic or post-menopausal scanning, you may have missed the boat at that stage because of these things not being done early in life.
You mentioned there about teenage girls in particular, yeah, and the need for calcium foods like milk. But what, like a lot of young girls won't drink milk,
milk is the way to go. It's got what you need. I can't really say anything about supplementation at that age group. Vitamin D, you just touched on it, is endemic. Vitamin D deficiency, is endemic in this country. I mean, if you look out the window today and see how dull it is. We have no vitamin D in this country for 6 months of the year, and I do vitamin D all the time in my patients, and you'd be shocked about how low some levels are. So vitamin D supplementation can be dietary. So, for example, we said vitamin D fortified milk. It can be in nuts. It can be in dairy products. But like I said, dairy products in a general sense would give you that calcium and vitamin D.
So like cheese and yogurt might do the trick. Yeah.
In conjunction with maintaining a good body weight, so you're not too thin or you're not overweight, in conjunction with activity, and I'm talking about weight-bearing activity, and that's all under teen years, and obviously not smoke.
We'll just take one or two, John. We're nearly done. A caller's son is 36 and he has palpitations. Started on beta blockers 3 months ago, but he's still getting the palpitations, and he also has high blood pressure.
Yeah.
36.
Young, absolutely. Can happen. The first question you'd worry about here is that there's an anxiety component. May or may not be, but he needs to be seen by a cardiologist. He needs a monitor called a Holter monitor, which is like an old CD or compact disc player that's attached onto his belt and a few sticky bits onto his chest. And he walks around with that for 24 to 72 hours. And hopefully there's what's called a catch, so that the tracing picks up the palpitations at whatever time of day he gets them. And you can see it on the recording. The other thing that people get as well is they may get a recording on their Apple watch or on their iPhone. They people can pick up palpitations, and you can see the time it's done and the tracing. But he needs to see a cardiologist. A beta blocker is absolutely the treatment to try and lower the rate of recurrences and slow the heart rate down. And then you mentioned blood pressure, was it?
Yeah, blood pressure.
Yeah, there's definitely a family history component here, but he needs to see a cardiologist and control the rate and the recurrence of it. Absolutely.
Very good. Listen, we better leave it there because we're out of time, John. But thank you for that. You're back with us again two weeks' time, I think. Thanks so much for stepping in for Dr. Eamon and indeed for answering all those queries for us.